Welcome to Scribe Session. Here, Inquirer Bengals beat writers Joe Reedy and Paul Daner Jr. escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily, all with the sidecar of sarcasm you've come to expect. Let's go.
Let's get ready to rumble! Feel the fires into the rear!
He'll gun it deep downfield for A.J. Green. A.J.'s got it! Touchdown! Bengals! Dalton in the shotgun, two receivers left, two to the right. Andy straight back to throw. Fires for Gresham in the end zone! Touchdown! Bengals! And Reedy burst up the middle of the field. Look out! Reedy's off to the races.
Let's get ready!
Oh, yes. Welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. I, of course, am Paul Daner Jr. here with you with the one and only Joe Reedy. Joe, how are you?
Good, Paul. Have you noticed on iTunes we have our Scribe Session ratings where I think the headline for our only rating right now is Reedy is unbearable. It's the headline.
You're going to open with that? Well, we should tell everyone, first of all, thank you for listening to Scribe Session. Feel free to rate the show and get it so there is more than just one rating on there rating us right now. But are you angry about this?
No, it's a guy who I blocked 2 years ago, and it is what it is and so forth.
Yeah, well, I do love one of my favorite things about training camp, which thankfully – is officially over, is that every once in a while when we're walking out to the field, someone will yell, "Joe Reedy, I love you on Twitter." And you will immediately respond with, "Have I blocked you yet?" Because of the people that say that, there's probably a pretty high percentage that you've put the block on.
Yeah, that is true. But, I haven't had one guy yet who, "You beep, I've... you blocked me. Why?"
Yes.
Or come up to me. But who knows? Maybe we'll break new ground this year. Or who knows what will happen. But
the last thing we need is a confrontation out there between you. And the Twitterati are meant to be anonymous and not ever come face-to-face. But if they do, I'm sure you can give a very logical reason for why you blocked them. As we all have them.
Yes, and as you know, people who I've greeted here at camp, plenty of them, and thank you for being greeted and greeting me and everything like that. It's been a nice exchange of views between the fans.
I do find that the fans that are here are usually very nice.
Yes.
It's just the
very
ones,
receptive.
Yeah, it's the ones hiding in the basement in the jammers. Firing off expletives for no reason are always the ones that tend to be the problem makers. But the ones that come here and they're dedicated, man, they're great.
Yes, we love our dedicated fans. We also love our dedicated tailgaters, where hopefully for those of you who are bemoaning the loss of a half hour, maybe you'll get some good news this week. I don't know.
Is this breaking news? Are you trying to break news here on the podcast?
We could. There is a possibility that tailgating could go back to 9. So, we'll see.
There was quite a crackback on that. People weren't really happy about this at all, which it just goes to show. I mean, it's been a while since I've tailgated, since I've started covering the league. But I wasn't tailgating hard enough to know this, but I just assumed you could show up to those lots whenever you wanted to. But no, they don't even open until a certain time.
Right.
And so you cannot go there. I didn't realize it was that closely regulated.
Oh, yeah, it is. And I think for many years going to Cleveland, the Muni lot, where those people, I think, would start drinking Friday at 6 o'clock and – I mean, there was a 1 year the Browns played the Steelers and Ohio State played Michigan the day before. It was just basically a weekend. So by that time, Sunday at 1 o'clock rolled around, there were a lot of bloodshot eyes and people ready to fight that weekend.
Yeah, they go pretty crazy up there. I always get concerned. One year, the last it was Andy and AJ's first year, so it was 2011. I was up there, and one of my buddies who I'd been trying to meet up with all weekend said, "Listen, it hadn't worked out. Just on your way into the game, stop in early, come down. We'll be in on a lot." And I said, "Okay, fine. I'll go in a little early and I'll pop over there."
And you popped over into Sodom and Gomorrah.
I'd never been to that lot before. Oh. It was complete madness at every turn. I'm walking around with a laptop and, you know, in relatively nice clothes, and it is just a complete, just absolutely frightening at every yes. turn. I went over there. I said, "Give me the sausage that you promised me, and I'm getting out of here." I immediately left. Although what I did enjoy most was that was the beginning of the 2011 season when everyone was, of course, down on the Bengals, and everybody was really riding high on the Browns that year, talking about, "This is the year they're going to go and make their run to the playoffs." And then they started barking at me like I cared.
You mean the beginning of the infamous Pat Shurmur era?
Yes.
Where they did battle and they did compete.
They competed. There's no doubt about it. But they were so excited for that season. And just to watch the death spiral that continued on to, I did always like checking back on my friends that were at that lot that day and reminding them of all their words.
Paul, with the exception of 2 years since 99, it's been a death spiral in Cleveland. Who are we kidding?
It is pretty awful. No. Luckily, the offense didn't take a death spiral here. After the first team offense struggled in Atlanta the first week, the storyline to come out of this past weekend with the Bengals beating up Tennessee 27-19 was the arrival of the first team offense. You saw Giovanni Bernard very involved, Mohamed Sanu making great plays. Marvin Jones had a couple of catches. Gresham was really blocking very well. Eifert with a couple catches. It seemed like all the pieces started to really come together this weekend.
Yeah, when you consider, Paul, no AJ, no Whitworth. Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis got the night off. Roy showed the depth of this offense, I think, with what Gio was able to do, catching and running the ball. Sanu played very well. Marvin Jones, Eifert had a couple good catches. Line, for the most part, did okay. Still a couple things here and there. Zeitler gave up a bad sack, which resulted in a turnover. Kyle Cook with the holding penalty. But I think run blocking, they did very well. Saw some three tight end sets with Alex Smith back. Fullbacks were okay. But the third down conversions, the fact that they attempted only two passes in the air over 15 yards and had a high completion percentage, the yards after catch out of that game were sick. I think out of 115 yards of Dalton's passing, 90 was Yak, which is extraordinary.
Yeah. Isn't that the way that they specifically without AJ out there, it's kind of how this offense is going to be in a lot of ways, is when you have so many guys that are capable of that, from Gresham to Eifert to Bernard, Sanu. I mean, those are the types of guys that are made for that, and that's sort of why they're here, because isn't that the way this offense is supposed to be composed?
Yeah, and I think when you got West Coast-based schemes, it's not to throw the ball 40 to 50 yards downfield. It's about chunk plays. It's about, to use Hank Scram, matriculating the ball down the field.
Yes.
That type of stuff, possession football. And I think Andy, the passes to Tate and the first one to Sanu, where he stiff-armed Bernard Pollard, gave a little Bernard Pollard back to Bernard Pollard, you would say. The perfect spot, put him in space, allowed him to do the run after the catch, and hopefully we'll see more of that.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Jay Gruden wants to see more of that. So the second game of the season, you see the offense take a step in the right direction. We were able to catch up with Jay Gruden along with a few other reporters after the game. Jay was, as always, very interesting, but you could kind of sense the bubbly in his voice a little bit, being excited to see what he saw for the first time. Held back, being the ticker tape It wasn't a full-on parade with balloons, but he obviously was thrilled. Here's pieces of what Jay Gruden had to say after the game.
The thing that had to please you was third down manageable distance, and then you converted.
Yeah, that is very huge. We had our troubles last year on third down. It's been a major emphasis. Hell, I know in camp we've faced more third downs in training camp than hopefully we'll have in three lifetimes. But, you know, we're working at it. We're taking a lot of pride in it. And, you know, we still can improve on it. But for the most part, I'm glad to see us converting and keeping drives alive.
As a lineman, after the game, I think my quarterback hit too much. I mean, he did. He got hit too much, didn't he? I mean,
yeah, he had three drives, you know. Got hit a couple times. You know, we got to shore up the protection. You know, and I don't know where it came from yet. I'll have to watch the film. I don't know if it was a back or if it was a tackle. But you're right. You know, they're rushing five and trying to collapse the pocket on them like a lot of teams do. And we just have to get the ball out quicker. We have to get open quicker and protect better.
Did Kobe Hamilton got some snaps at the end of the second quarter with a higher caliber defensive player? He seemed to respond a little bit.
He did. Kobe's a tough guy, and he's not afraid of anything. You know, he just needs to slow down and use his strength that he has and his size as a wide receiver and work some defensive backs over like he did on the slant that he caught. You know. But he's a good target. You know, and, you know, the receiving group that we have right now, they've all done things that are worthwhile for us to take them with us to Chicago. That's for sure. Right. So it's going to be a difficult decision, but fortunately we have two more games left, and hopefully it'll pan out for us.
Did Tyler slow down a little bit? Did he slow down his tempo a little bit, like you talked about? He was maybe a little
quicker. Yeah, he's fine. I didn't, you know, we didn't feature him too much. A couple times we tried to get him out there, give him some looks, but he caught a seam ball, which is excellent. No fear up in the middle, and got another ball in a flat, which is good. But had a screen pass and got called back, so we tried to get him a few touches. But I'm not worried about Tyler at all.
Bernard seems to be everything you thought when you got him out of the draft. I mean, he's done. Really
yeah, he's you know, he's a change of pace guy that you need. You know, and Rex has done the same thing, and Hal Boone done the same thing, and Cedric has done some good things. But Gio, he's got a different change of direction, change of pace, like you say. It
seems like he really got a real good blocking game from Gresham. He seemed to be pretty
Gresham is. I would like to know a better blocking tight end in the NFL than Jermaine. You know, he can pass block and he can run block, and he's as good at blocking tight end, I would think, as there is.
Clint Bowling looked pretty good. Left tackle, I mean, it was limited, but I mean, he looked like he belonged out there. He looked comfortable.
Now, he's played all the line spots, as you know, except center, or he has played center, so he's played them all. And Clint's, that's why he's so valuable to a football team, because he can sub in at left tackle, right guard, right, left guard, center. And obviously the film, I assume he did pretty good because he's a smart guy.
No AJ, no Whitworth, no Benny, and you put that type of offensive performance together.
That was good. You know, that goes credit to a lot of guys. You guys are working hard, they're studying hard, and it just shows that we have some depth. You know, we have some depth, some guys that can play in the second and third quarter, fourth quarter for that matter. And, you know, they're going to make the decisions hard. That's what the preseason is all about. And I challenge everybody at halftime to go out there and play hard, and they did that.
You feel like Josh followed up his performance in Atlanta with another solid one?
I do. You know, Josh has a skill set that you can work with. You know, there's some things that we did tonight that not every quarterback can do. Right. You know, we had three big runs, you know, because of his athleticism. And he had a scramble for almost a touchdown if he didn't run into his lineman. He had a scramble for that touchdown on 3rd and 20. And you know, if you're down to your backup quarterback, you need something that you can sink your teeth into. You need him to be able to make some plays with his legs or something. You know, John is still competing, and he's not out of the mix yet. He had some good throws again today. So the last two games will be very important for those two guys.
Five different receivers with a catch of 22 or more yards, 22 to 32 yards, five different guys. You're spraying it around pretty good for big plays from a lot of people.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, you know, and hopefully take some pressure off AJ when he comes back here. So those guys need to continue to work, get open, find holes in zones, and quarterbacks need to keep finding them. And it's just the nature of the game, man. It all starts up front, though. We got to do a better job in pass pro, like you say. Right. And he's got to have a better feel for when the pocket collapses and eliminate those unfortunate sacks and fumbles.
What makes Sanu so good on third down?
Great target. He's smart. He knows how to run routes. You know. Other than that.
Third and five was, I guess.
It was third down at 9, and he ran an under route, a 5-yard under. It's one of those things, if he catches it, gets tackled, the coach gets booed out the stadium. Because what are you throwing a 5 yards for in 3rd and 8? Well, He's got a good position on his guy, and it's hard to tackle him. And Andy put in a great spot, and you know, people underestimate how important a location that throw is. You know, it's an under route that's got to be right here so he can catch and turn up and run.
That's when we beat Paul.
Yeah. He stiff-armed and got to the 1 foot line. So
Tate also had a good under route, too.
Same thing with Tate, and that location on that ball is perfect also. He throws that ball right here, Tate gets tackled for 5 yards, and we're punting. Right. You know, so those are two big plays that were, I think,
with the ball,
my favorite two plays of the night, actually. Not only was it a great location, good protection, but great finishes by the guys.
You've been talking the entire last season about chunk plays and yak, and those
were exactly right. And chunk plays don't always have to be thrown way down the field. Chunk plays can come on a swing pass of Giovanni Bernard for 35 yards or an under route to Mo for 25 yards. You know, so those are huge. When Joe Montana played with the Niners, now
7 yard completion,
yeah, gone.
Jerry Rice is gone, man.
You know, those plays help out a lot. They help the quarterback's confidence. They help your rhythm on offense. You know, we just got to try to continue to work and get some good run after catch and big plays. But you know, it's early yet. We just got to keep working, and we're happy with where we're going. You know, we still have ways to go, but we feel pretty good.
The 35, this Sanu looked like he just went right into that. He read it was too deep, and just went to the spot.
Yeah. Oh, the one he caught on. Yeah.
35.
That was a zone, and he felt the zone, and nobody better at that than Mo. You know, he's a quarterback and safety, and he knows all the holes and knows man to man how to beat leverage. And he's got size advantage and strength advantage on all those guys. So, you know, keep working with him.
It's hard not to be happy when you see the ball distributed as much, and you see I like Jay talking about his two favorite plays being those short crosses to Sanu and to Tate, because that's what those guys bring. And I wrote about it in the walkthrough this week. The numbers differential, and it was a very small sample size if you look at the three games where Sanu played more than 50% of the offensive snaps, but the numbers are extraordinary difference in their conversion rate on third down, in their conversions in the red zone, overall points scored. They were so good when he's in it because he thrives in those positions that the Bengals lack in. And that's what they missed the first half of last season when the offense struggled, and that's what they missed the last few games of last season when he was out injured, was that guy who could convert you to third downs and turns field goals into touchdowns in the red zone.
Yeah, I think games 2 through 4, it was points, big plays, and all that. Third down conversion, good, not great.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then you had the 0 for October spin, and which was the second time in 3 years. But I think now, when you saw what he could do in October, what he could do in November, and then December, how this offense sputtered. I mean, he's such a big target and a physical receiver who can play inside, outside, whatever you need him to do. He is so effective that way that it really branches out to the rest of the offense.
Yeah, and like Jay was saying, it's his intelligence in finding the zones and everything that makes him such a unique player. And I think the most important asset on this offense, and so in that respect, you could argue almost one of the most important assets on the entire team as far as taking it to the next level. I mean, if you talk about the guy that can really be the game changer, I think he's it, because he keeps it. When you can't have a West Coast offense and not have a guy like that,
right,
that can move the chains for you. Otherwise, you're just dinking and dunking and punting. And which could have been the slogan for the offense at times last year. You know,
Kevin Huber. All pro.
He was all pro. So, I think all in all, they're 2-0. So you know what that means.
What does that mean?
I don't know. It means absolutely nothing.
It's a preseason.
It means absolutely nothing. It does say that this team has a lot of depth, which only means that they're going to have a lot of difficult decisions to make in a few weeks, which that then means it's time to play a game. It's time to play Offensive Rosterology.
I love it when we get into the British polka.
I'm just glad we could bring it back for a second week. It's almost the biggest reason that we had to separate defensive and offensive rosterology, so we could get double the run out of Match of the Day.
But with the Premier League premiering last weekend, the Match of the Day theme was also played on NBC Sports Network this weekend, which Paul, I know the Twitterverse was somewhat angry over this. Cincinnati, eighth highest market for the Man U Swansea City game this past Saturday.
Were you part of that?
I
that
was.
Ratings bonanza?
I was.
So you're a big. See, I can't. I'm sorry. I can't do it. I can't get into soccer. I can't get into a football. I just can't. It's too. There's just. I need something to happen. What I would watch are the condensed games. You give me a condensed games like they do with the NFL when they shrink it down to a half hour. Give me a half
hour. That's why you watch Match of the Day on the NBC Sports Network. Yeah. It's condensed.
Yeah, well, I would need it shrunk down to about 8 minutes because is that the only seemingly real action that happens? Anytime the ball gets passed backward, turn it off. Just cut it. We don't need any of that. Just give me the time. Whenever it gets into the zone, I will watch.
And eight games in 2 hours.
That's not – I mean, I could maybe get behind that. I mean, I'm obviously not exposed to it, so maybe you're opening up my mind here a little bit.
Unlike a couple people who tweeted, who cares, including – I ain't going to say it.
Well, but, you know what James Harrison would say those people are?
Play it.
That's right.
There we go.
Pain in the double A. That's exactly what James Harrison has to say about that. So, but hey, let's get back to our offensive rosterology. That's what you came here for. So let's start it off.
I thought they came here for my witty repartee and singing.
And singing, which you haven't sung yet, but we don't really have a had a reason.
Not yet.
These things have to happen organically.
Yes.
You can't just force the tunes out of you. I'm sure something will happen
here eventually.
Yeah, let's go to start it off here with quarterbacks. I don't. Obviously, there's a competition here, and I think equally as obviously, only two will be kept.
Yes,
it's not like in past years where the third was immediately going to be stashed on the practice squad. You know, right now you're going to have Josh Johnson or John Skelton is going to go onto the free market and end up on another team somewhere, more than likely. Maybe.
Might be an injury somewhere.
Where's that at right now?
With another team. I still think Josh Johnson has really done nothing to release his stranglehold from number two right now, I think.
Even the fact that they gave Skelton the number two snaps and playing some with the first team?
Well, make it a little bit equal, and I think he did well on that drive where they got the field goal. Mm-hmm. But Josh Johnson led him to two scores with the third team. If he doesn't run into Richard Quinn, he probably runs and gets a touchdown. And I think blocking downfield on the Dan Heron touchdown, Dan might have thought it was at like his days at Ohio State and Terrell Pryor out front. I don't think Terrell blocked, but, wait a minute. There's an athletic quarterback running in front of me. This is – where am I, in the horseshoe?
Yeah.
People have tried to debate me on this, that Skelton, still slow learning to play, still a learning curve. He's got a great arm. He's got a better arm than Josh Johnson right now. There's no doubt about that.
And he's more accurate.
He's plenty accurate. He leads in the interception competition of the three quarterbacks.
That's true.
So the ball hardly hits the ground when John Skelton's
now.
Throwing.
How much of that has to do with not knowing the offense necessarily always where it's supposed to go, and how much that has to do with him being inaccurate? Because I think the idea, if you did keep Skelton, would be he's going to figure it out. It's just taking him a little bit longer because he doesn't know the system as well. And once he does, wouldn't a guy who was maybe more accurate or not, as in Hard Knocks quoted last week with Josh Johnson, quote, horribly inaccurate as he is, wouldn't that be a better fit for a West Coast-type scheme?
Maybe, but he's also – John Skelton's a type of quarterback that if this was still the Bob Brakowski system, chucking it down the field and being athletic, this would be his offense, which kind of shocked me why he was released from Arizona this early, because Arian's system, it's a lot better than Brakowski's system, but
right.
It's downfield and being aggressive. I just think with a second quarterback, with what you can do during games in terms of athleticism and everything, Johnson's your guy right now, and he has experience with the West Coast system. Now, can Skelton reverse that trend in the last two games? You hope, but there's been plenty of evidence right now that has Johnson as a pretty good number two right now.
Yeah, like Jay said, you got to, as a backup quarterback, you got to have something you can sink your teeth into. And you're
and
right.
And those legs.
Those legs are something you can sink your teeth into. I mean, that's something you can actually make use of even when Andy Dalton is healthy, if necessary. And certainly, if he had to win a game or two, you could create a game plan where he could throw teams for a loop because of that. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely been more effective. It's not over yet. And I don't, you know, I don't think it's over, but it doesn't look great. And much of that is to do with the fact that he doesn't know the system. But I think John now finally feels like he's starting to figure it out. So if he can make a push, if he starts knowing exactly where the ball's going and starts making those plays, he could make a push to overcome Johnson. We could see him.
He would have to have a gangbusters game against Indy because, let's face it, probably we'll see less than a quarter against Dallas. I think the starters will go a half plus one series, which means one quarterback gets the rest of the third quarter and maybe the first series of the fourth, and then whoever else gets the rest. And, you know, probably Indy one series for the starters, and then it's split duty the rest of the way. And let's face it, Skelton's going to have a great game against Indy.
Yeah, and that may be the game where he comes in and plays as the second quarterback again and has his chance, and we shall see. But yeah, I think you're probably right. Right now he's got the advantage, but it's not quite over. So we'll have two quarterbacks kept there.
And Skelton has made gains. Skelton, it's not as bad as it was at the beginning of the preseason where we were wondering if Josh was going to start lapping him. I mean,
yeah.
Skelton has made progress, but you just got to wonder if it's enough at this point.
Exactly. So, third quarterback on the practice squad, because Zach Robinson isn't healthy. I mean, will there be one?
Probably go out and find someone. You look at the waiver wire and everything and go that
similar
way.
Similar what they have done there with getting Zach Robinson, and Dan LaFever was the same way when they brought him in right after final cuts and just stuck somebody on the practice squad to develop. Unfortunate for Zach Robinson, good guy, had his opportunities, but this injury just really kind of has doomed him. And you know,
probably starts a year on PUP, and then we get to injury settlement or IR or what have you.
Yeah, I mean, from the conversations I have had with him, it doesn't sound like it's come along as quickly as he would have hoped. His arm, I mean, he really wanted to be a part of the Derby, and he just physically cannot hack it right now. So that's the quarterback position. Let's move on to one of the most difficult, which is the running backs, where Joe has taken on Nebraskans and cancer patients everywhere by leaving Rex Burkhead off of your final list of who you would personally pick.
Who I would personally pick at this point. Now, I will say,
Team Jack is not happy.
Team Jack is not happy until what I am about to say.
Okay.
If I was to pick the 53 on August 19th, Dan Heron would get it over Rex Burkhead. What I think will happen on August 31st, and I will explain this, is that Rex Burkhead will probably get it over Dan Heron on the final 53, and here's why. If you expose Rex Burkhead to a cut and place him through waivers, a team will probably claim him. Dan Heron, I'm not so sure, and this is where the politics of cuts come in, that who do you think you can sneak through? And then after talking to the agents, the infamous Dez Bryant will see scenario of 3 years ago, the Battle of Dez Briscoe, as I like to call
it. The Battle of Briscoe.
If you look at what they can do right now, Heron, that's why I chose Heron over Burkhead. He has experience on special teams. You can keep him as the active 46. He gives you more. Rex Burkhead, the only thing I see right now is that he's one of the seven inactives, and he's not going to give you a lot on teams at this time. You base it on future potential and everything. you keep Burkhead thinking he is a Brian Leonard type guy. He'll be one of the active 46. He can grow into teams. But if I was to play a general manager right now, it would be Heron. And I know full well Burkhead would get claimed, and I'd bite that bullet. What I think in the end is that Burkhead will very likely to be a part of this 53. It'll expose Heron. Heron can come back on the practice squad.
And if something were to happen, Heron would be the first one to be activated.
Oh, absolutely.
And at that point, Burkhead may even stay as one of the seven that don't play on game day. Because that, as an inactive member of the 53, seems to be his destiny this year, barring a bunch of injuries.
Right.
Whereas if you brought Heron in, because of what he brings you on special teams as well, he would maybe be more likely to be active.
Yeah.
Right now. But in the future, Burkhead is more worth keeping.
Yeah, and I think as we looked at last year, most of those running backs were active during games. Pierman, what he does on special teams. And, I mean, people were asking me, well, wouldn't you keep both Heron and Burkhead and cut Pierman? Pierman right now, and stats are stats, is averaging slightly more than Giovanni Bernard in yards per carry right now.
And you may send Darren Simmons out to the bridge out there to jump
off. Yeah, I mean, Cedric Pierman's done what he's supposed to do right now.
He's a very valuable asset to the team right now.
Yeah, extremely.
He can't go anywhere. And I think the coaches realize that as much as anybody else. Cedric Pierman is staying. He's the third running back on this team, and he's going to be your special teams ace, as he has continued to be. They have no problem putting Cedric Pierman in there to run plays, and just look what he did last year on special teams, taking the two fake punts that he took.
Well, look what he did a couple series when he got to play against Oakland, Kansas City. Mm-hmm. So yards per carry weren't bad. In fact, they were, you know, what you expect out of a third running back.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good. The other person that we talked to, Giovanni Bernard, had his bit of a preseason breakout that he's been looking for. Every time he touched it, pretty much something great was happening. I believe it ended up being seven touches for about 59 yards, if you count the reception of 22 yards. Just a great game where you saw what he brings, the burst, the shiftiness, the ability to beat linebackers out in space, as he did in the reception. He really brings a little bit of everything. Here's Giovanni Bernard right after the game talking about his first kind of big game as a Bengal and what he expects of himself.
A lot's been made of your speed and shiftiness. How eager are you to prove that you can take it up through the tackles as well?
I'm definitely eager. For me, I want to be an every down back. I don't want to be just a guy that's just shifty or just a guy that could just run outside or catch the balls out the backfield. I want to be able to be a guy that could do it all. And that's the thing I bring to the table is a person that's able to do it all. If I can add that to my game, it's going to be awesome. And Benny is going to come back real strong. And we're just excited for this entire thing going on and seeing how it plays out.
How important was it for the ones to get some points on the board this week?
It was definitely important. That was one thing Coach Lewis kind of talked about, starting off fast. I think we kind of had some hiccups in the beginning, but we definitely, kind of lowered the mental errors, and we did a good job of that tonight. We just got to continue to pick up the pace in the first drive, second drive, whatever it is. We got to be able to turn out points, early in the quarter.
You were pretty tough on yourself last week.
Still am.
Yeah, but you had to be happy, though, to come out and make some of the plays that you were hoping to show in week one, I guess.
For me, my biggest thing is just, yards per carry, and it still wasn't as high as I wanted it to be, but it just leaves room for, getting better.
Yeah.
That's the thing about me. I'm always trying to get better at everything, and I'm always going to critique myself real hard. No matter if I have 300 yards in one game, I'm still going to find that one play or two plays where I messed up at. So that's just how I am. That's the only way that's gotten me here.
Yeah.
To continue to be a tough critic on myself.
Those 1 yard touchdown runs kill your average.
Yeah, it's okay. Exactly. I mean, things like that happen, but I could easily say, I should have scored on, the other play that could have made that average that much longer. So there's just, things that, I got to correct and get better at. It's just an everyday process. Every game I feel more comfortable. The sky's the limit, not only for me, but for this team as well. And we're just really excited for the season coming up.
Was there a different feeling tonight? Because there's some nerves associated with the first game for any rookie.
Was there much more of a comfort level out there tonight just with, okay, it's just football, I know what to expect now that I've been through one of them?
Definitely. That was one of the things that our special teams coordinator, Coach Simmons, kind of said, is that, you know, you see the biggest jumps from rookies from the first game to the second game, mm-hmm. and, you know, their play. And, you know, I definitely felt a lot more comfortable, you know, playing here as well. I mean, it's our home field, it's our home crowd, people are rooting us on. So that definitely helped as well. But for me, the biggest part is just continuing to get better. And just strive for greatness.
And yards per touch you can also look at, because you have the 22-yard reception. So
but
you had to, like, be able to show the hands off a little bit, too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's just, you know, another thing I bring to the table, is just being able, you know, just on third downs, like, I think it was the third down, I'm not sure. Second or short, third or short, whatever it was, just to be able to, you know, pick up the first down on, you know, a short completion, but create big plays after it. So just continue to get better and see how it goes.
I think it was that drive where it was, You had the runs, and then you had the catch, and then Sanu comes across.
Yeah.
When you start seeing that stuff happen, you kind of see the weapons develop. What's that like for you to see kind of everything coming together?
Well, I mean, I see it every day at practice and in the meeting rooms. I just see, you know, so many talented guys out here creating big plays every day in practice. I mean, there's times where, you know, Mo in practice makes amazing catches that, you know, that not many people can really do. And every time he does it, I'm still wowed by it. Even, you know, the back of the end zone today, he did, you know, amazing catch. I mean, I probably can't do that because I'm too short. But whatever it is, he's just a phenomenal player. We have a lot of playmakers on this team, and offensively we have a lot of as well.
Which also, speaking about Giovanni Bernard, you know I love my folks at Bovada, formerly Bodog.
Yes.
How do you not have Giovanni Bernard in your odds for Offensive Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, he's going to be as featured. He's the number Well, he's the number one running back taken, which Offensive Rookie of the Year, how often is it a running back? I mean, I would say, I bet, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I bet you it's better than 50% of the time because quarterbacks don't typically develop that fast unless it's the last
years. Last 2 years.
The last 2 years, until the last 2 years. But before that, you know, running backs always are the quickest to make contributions because it takes, you know, it doesn't take as much of an adjustment. So I think you're absolutely right. So maybe if you're in Vegas, if you can find a Giovanni Bernard line,
if there's a field option, I'm taking field right now. I mean, what the hell more does this kid have to prove? I mean, Eddie Lacy, I think, is 9-2 or something from Bodog.
That's because everybody saw Eddie Lacy play one game and he looked great, so everybody's buying in Eddie Lacy as if the Packers are going to run the ball. If Aaron Rodgers is my quarterback, Eddie Lacy, I hope you're ready for some goal line carries and occasionally take the ball because he's going to be flinging it. It's pretty pretty insane. So running backs, Giovanni Bernard, you know what you got. It was good to see what he had to do. Ben Jarvis still just kind of taking it easy. Nothing's wrong with him, at least according to Marvin. Why put extra hits on Benny if you don't have to when you want to see more from Gio anyway? So that's pretty much the running back situation. The fullback battle, it is what it is. It's still ongoing. We really don't exactly know who's in front yet, but I got to think at the end of the day it ends up being Orson Charles because of his versatility.
Or even worse, now that I have the Bodog list in front of me, Joseph Randall and Mike Gillisley are listed in running back odds, and Giovanni Bernard isn't.
Get the field right.
How?
Is there a field? Is there a field option in Bovada?
There has to be. Le'Veon Bell, 12-1. Denard Robinson's listed. He's 25-1.
Go get it done right now.
Get place the field. This is just sad.
You're upset.
I feel a shoe coming on.
No shoes will be thrown in the film in the recording of this podcast, please. That was a first shoe throw in the history of Scribe Session. First of what I'm sure will be many. Pretty good height on that, actually. Nice mark high on the wall.
Thank you.
Let's move on to receiver. We talked a lot about this earlier, the Sanu effect. Well, here's what it comes down to. Six. We're figuring six here.
Yes.
We're figuring six. So you figure you've got AJ.
AJ, Sanu, Marvin.
Marvin Jones is your big three. Once you get past that, is Dane Sonsenbacher going – is he one of the last ones in at this point?
Yeah, Dane's in. I think Brandon Tate's safe.
Tate's safe.
Brandon Tate has had a great training camp, and I know people hate to hear that, but – Mm-hmm. Tate needed to show development as a receiver. Brandon Tate is showing development as a receiver. He is this franchise's career leader in punt return average yards. And granted, there are times when he has deserved his fair share of criticism.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy's doing what he's supposed to right now. Absolutely doing what he's supposed to right now.
So, is Kobe Hamilton safe? Is he one of those guys that falls into the Burkhead mold that if you put him, expose him, that he would be picked up?
Well, on this final 53, Andrew Hawkins makes it because you can't designate him to IR until September 3rd at 4 o'clock.
You've got to find a way to sneak somebody onto the roster only to move them off.
Right. Kobe Hamilton, to me, hasn't proven that he's one of the six best receivers at this point.
I'd agree with that.
Plenty of drops, and is a sixth-round guy. You can't do that.
But if they released Kobe Hamilton in an attempt to bring him back,
right,
on, you know, on that Tuesday afterwards when Hawkins goes
or
to
practice squad
or designated to return, yeah.
Because remember, we don't have Ryan Whalen as one of the six,
right? Yeah. So yeah, that it gets real hairy in there.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Whalen gets claimed, Kobe Hamilton doesn't. You probably can sneak Kobe Hamilton on. He's wide receiver number six. He's inactive. Is one of the seven inactives on Sundays.
Now, the other thing to be discussed, though, is it doesn't have to come from receiver. They could keep seven receivers with Hawkins as a part of that and find another position somewhere where they think they could sneak somebody.
And
couldn't they?
And to me, that's
risky.
That's extremely risky because as we looked, could you go nine? Because to me, if you go only nine DBs, you should go seven linebackers. You know you're going nine defensive linemen. You know you're going nine offensive linemen. You know you're going five running backs. Do you not have a fullback as part of this final 53? And then that's the way you get somebody back. That maybe I could see. But then, I mean, I keep having these bad 2010 flashbacks with special
right.
teams and fullbacks that...
Yeah, I wonder how they're going to do this.
Could you not go a fullback on the final 53 and get one back on Tuesday? Yeah, you could. I mean, that's definitely a possibility, but, you know, as you and I know, when Roderick McElroy was the final cut last year and he was guy 54, or at least we thought he was guy 54.
Yeah.
It took an injury to bring him back, and 4 weeks later he was gone. Guys who we think are guys 54 and 55 really aren't 54 and 55 as things eventually bear out and prove. And let's face it, too, there are going to be a lot of surprising players cut throughout the league next Saturday, and they could pick up one. They could waiver claim one. It's just kind of waiting and
seeing. Here's my one thought on this. And, you know, along with Jay Gruden, I love the Sonsenbacher name. But when you have, and they brag about this all the time, a group of receivers where everyone can play everywhere, including in the slot, and Sonsenbacher, to me, is a guy that can only play in the slot. You're not going to send him outside. I think that he would maybe be the one that goes.
You can use him on teams, though, and I base Sonsenbacher at spot
Whalen,
six
does Whalen
on teams.
Have no – I mean
– Whalen does, but I think the punt return – and to me, 4 years ago, the punt return is what got Quan Cosby onto the 53. The punt return to me and what he can do on other units, because him and Whalen are basically equal until you factor in that if worse came to worse, you could use Sonsenbacher as a returner. I don't think you could use Ryan Whalen as a returner.
But don't they have enough returners? I mean, you have Pac-Man, you've got Geo, you've got Marvin Jones has been back there. Sanu has taken returns. Yeah, Sonsenbacher can do it, but
yeah,
got
but
a
if
lot
those,
of guys
but
that can
the,
do
if
it.
Those are starter type guys, do you risk putting them back there?
Yeah.
That's...
What would Sansabaker be on the returner list if he were on this squad? Wouldn't he be third behind Pac-Man and Geo? Or fourth?
Yeah, Tate. Probably fourth.
I mean, he'd be fourth. You would keep a guy because he could be a fourth returner?
Yeah, but I think he can work in kick coverage and everything too. To me, him and Whalen are the same. Sansenbacher and Whalen are the same guy until you factor in the return aspect.
Yeah.
And let's face it, you're splitting hairs on a couple of these positions right now, and that's an awfully big hair when you come to split that you necessarily can't.
Yeah, that position is going to be very interesting. I think for me, right now, it ends up being Tate, Green, Sanu, Marvin Jones, Ryan Whalen as your fifth receiver, Hamilton, or Hawkins stays, and they try and do something with Hamilton coming back. Thinking of that, but who knows? There's two games left where if any of those guys on the back end have more big games, they're going to continue to expose themselves to other teams and maybe have to change.
The Des Briscoe effect.
Exactly. Let's quickly go through the offensive line. Where do we stand with the offensive line? Is that pretty much set at this point?
I gotta think so. Whitworth, Smith, your tackles. Cook is the center. Zeitler and Bowling is the guards. Robinson, Pollock, Hawkinson, and Collins are my reserves at the moment. And sorry, Dennis Rowland. And I like Dennis Rowland, right. Respect the heck out of him. Great guy. But considering with tight ends right now, I've got Eifert, Gresham, and Alex Smith, unless Alex Smith suffers a pratfall of the century and you get Orson Charles, and then both Orson Charles and John Connor make this team.
Yeah.
I just think Dennis Rowland and Terrence Steffens might be singing End of the Road to, unfortunately. I won't, though.
With the influx of young offensive linemen, this seemed to be a writing on the wall type of thing was going to have to change.
I mean, TJ Johnson, Reed Fragel. I mean, Paul Alexander is going to have fun with those practice squad guys.
Yeah, there's plenty of young guys there. You're right. You know, Rowland he's come back on all these contracts for a reason because he does provide depth for you there. But I think they like enough of what those young guys can do and the versatility of a guy like Bowling that it opens up the ability to make sure they keep all these young guys to develop them.
And I mean, Rowland has played guard. Has done a solid job at it. But Pollock, guard and center, Hawkinson, tackle, guard, Collins, okay, tackle. They wanted him to play guard, albeit Collins maybe a little bit grudgingly, and Paul going, no, he's strictly a tackle. And then I'm missing someone. Fragel, Pollock. Oh, Robinson, center guard.
Right. Yeah. All these guys are versatile.
Yeah. Yeah. You got versatility.
For sure. So we'll see how that all breaks down. But again, two more weeks, injuries will inevitably happen and probably come into play in how many of these guys stay and go. Teams that look so deep at the beginning of preseason often change by the end of it to having to make trades for certain positions. And next thing you know, Kelly Jennings is your third cornerback. These things have happened before, and they can continue to happen again.
And, of course, you know, as we reach the end of rosterology, Paul.
Sad.
You know that Marvin's not exactly worried about the league. He's well.
Well, that's right. As this was said earlier in the week, when rosterology numbers were being tossed around, this was Marvin Lewis's statement to Joe Reedy.
I don't really worry about the league, Joe. I'm more concerned with you.
Quote of the year, maybe so far.
Cause I'm wanted. Dead or alive.
You may be. We may have the wanted poster up of you soon. I just love the idea of Marvin sitting there at his desk with a picture of Goodell and a picture of you on the other side just trying to figure out which one he's going to throw the darts at that day. Because there's no doubt you do chasing down snap counts, rosterology numbers, and all the cap numbers is really just – it's really just too much for him to handle at this point.
Yeah, because it's – I mean, it's one of those you get to read on things and you could go, come on, quit trying to snow me over. Here's the numbers. Numbers don't lie in some cases.
Nope, he is not worried about the league. He's worried about Joe Reedy, and you just soaked in 40 minutes of it. So I hope you enjoyed this week's Scribe Session. As always, it was a pleasure bringing it to you.
Are we gonna go out this week with a little Bon Jovi?
There's only one way we could possibly go out. So thank you, John Bon Jovi. Thank you, New Jersey. This has been Scribe Session. Keep following Joe at Joe Reedy on Twitter, me at Paul Daner Jr., and keep checking with the blog. Of course, Joe will be live from Dallas coming to you this weekend for the big third preseason dress rehearsal, and we'll be back here next Tuesday discussing whatever the heck ends up happening down there. So we are out of here. Thank you for listening to Scribe Session.
So long.